He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
Hey everyone, I was hoping to get this message put together sooner, but things like this unfortunately take time to set up. I just want to say that the acts of war against Ukraine break my heart, and I know as a prior service member myself that my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's fighting the fight that they really shouldn't have to. That being said, we have been working behind the scenes with all of our podcasts and podcast partners to put a fund together in order to pay for any refugee housing and other needs that go alongside that, like food, water, and any clothing needs. Internally, many podcasts in the Hospitality FM network have voluntarily given up sponsorship money in order to donate to the cause and are working on a unified message in order to spread throughout all of our podcasts. So this is me calling out to all of our property manager friends, industry experts, and anyone knowing of those providing lodging for Ukrainian refugees seeking safety. You can contact me directly at Will with one L, W-I-L, at slicktalkmedia.com. We have an internal document that is being updated in real time, so if anyone could share this message within your network, we'd greatly appreciate it. I'm also placing in the show notes a link to our GoFundMe and landing page for Rentals to Rescue. That's rentalstorescue.com, where we're putting funds together in order to, again, provide finances for any of these lodging and relocation needs. So thank you so much for tuning into this quick message. I hope you guys are all well and safe, as I know we have tons of listeners in Ukraine and other countries in Europe. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
So maybe you need to convert part of your lobby into a co-working space and maybe deploy kiosks there. So that, because yeah. Generally a lobby is a space where you have this giant reception desk where people queue up for a bad experience. Maybe rethink that whole experience so that it's your prime real estate. The lobby is the nicest piece of the hotel that is used for queuing up at a reception desk. Rethink that. You can totally do it in a different way.
You're listening to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, a podcast for those who are in and around the hospitality industry who love, live, and breathe what they do. You can join us for candid and unscripted conversations with hospitality experts and founders as we go deeper into their personal stories while they're sharing their triumphs and trials that got them to where they are today. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and you're listening to an episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now, let's begin. In hotels and vacation rentals, the top complaints or issues are noise, garbage, and parking. I may not be able to solve all of your parking and garbage problems, but I could definitely help with your noise problems. And that actually might just help your garbage and parking problems too. So NoiseAware is the only 100% privacy safe noise monitoring solution that property managers and owners can use in order to ensure they avoid parties and other issues happening at their property. You won't get notified when a plate breaks, but if you have a little quiet get together that kind of gets out of hand like this, then NoiseAware will give you the peace of mind to ensure that you and your property, and of course, your profits, are protected. So use my code SLICKTALK20 to get 20% off of all noise monitoring devices and focus on the other important things that help you run your business. Now thank you for checking out Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Get back to the episode, and don't forget to check out NoiseAware while you're listening. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, and I'm very excited to have Matt, who is the CEO of Muse. If anyone's an avid listener of the podcast, we had Richard, who is one of the founders as well, on the podcast, and we went very deep into the philosophy of hospitality and what it means to really sell not just a room, but an experience. How do you capture more of a guest, time and thought process outside of their stay from the before and after of their experience? So, Matt, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very excited. Obviously, a big fan of Muse and what you guys have built. So, welcome.
Thank you. Nice. I'm excited.
Of course. Yeah. Where are you located? Just for the audience's sake.
I'm currently in Prague, Czech Republic. So,
Well, what's the weather like? Is it as cold as it is here in Denver?
it's like just above freezing point. I'm raining and drizzling for the last few weeks. I love snow, so I'm really holding out for some good snow this year.
Okay. Well, I was gonna say we woke up to a big blanket of snow this morning. So, yeah,
Nice.
you'll have
I'm
to make it over
jealous.
to Denver one day. But no, let's jump into it. I really want to get to know your story. This is a founders focused story, as well as CEOs, executives in the industry that we really love to dive in deep and not just talk about the products and what you guys have built, but to connect that personal aspect. I think the audience really enjoys that part. So where'd your story all begin? What's the start point for hospitality in your life?
It started in the well. I'm Dutch originally, and Dutch people, we have two major holidays. There's the one where the whole of Holland migrates to Austria to go skiing in the winter, and then there's the one where we get our like camper van behind our car and we go to France. And those kind of the two directional the holidays that we take. And I remember at the age of four, I knew that I was going to be a hotelier. I went to Austria, and these hotels are beautiful. These wooden hotels in the mountains of Austria. And if you think about it, like in winter you get beautiful snow, and then in the summer the weather is wonderful there, and they give you like schnitzels. I don't know if you've ever had this food. So I arrived in this hotel, and they gave me fantastic food. You get to ski all day, and I just loved it. And that was truly the moment when I knew that I was going to be a hotelier. And then the moment I was allowed to go work at 16, I started working in restaurants, and everything was. I'm a nerd, In school, I was the guy in front of the class with my hand in the air at all times. So I was always ambitious. I always wanted to have a career and work as hard as I could, because I get excited about working. I don't really have hobbies, and work is my hobby, which is silly to say. But I've always had this ambition to go into the hotel space.
Well, that's pretty incredible. 4 years old is an early age to be like, that's it. And I think like a lot of people that don't get to travel at a younger age, they don't really get to the get like that fantasy of it, where it was like the brand new room, it's a comfy bed, you have the TV, possibly room service. Like, it's just a new and exciting experience, especially as a kid. So I can only imagine if more people were exposed to it at a younger age, how many people would actually get into the industry. But you said something that was really cool and fascinating. So you're always asking questions, always raising your hand. I'm guilty of this as well. I just moved to Denver like in November of last year. And all these people were like, oh, so what do you do? Like, blah, blah, blah. And telling them, podcasts and da, da, da. But they're like, oh, what do you do outside of work? And I was like, nothing. I don't have any hobbies. This is my hobby that is also work at the same time. So how do you balance that? Do you find there's like a work-life balance type thing for you? Or is it more of a, like, I don't know, how do you just turn that off and go into a normal personal life outside of Muse?
Yeah, it's hard, especially when you're a hyperscale business. Like it is hard to find that balance. The typical work week is 60 hours working. And that's been the same for the last 10 years with Muse, and it's got worse and better sometimes, but on average it's 60 hours. And I try and really be regimented about my routine. I sleep 8 hours at night. I work out every day. And if I don't do those things, I feel off for the rest of the day. But then, if you think about that, right? So you've got your 8 hours of sleep, you got your workout in, then you get 12 hours of working in that day. Then you get 2 hours at the end of your day before you have to get back to bed to get your 8 hours of sleep. So midweek, there is no social life. It's in the weekend. So we really try on Friday and Saturday night to go hang out with friends. But it is hard. Like, unfortunately, being in a startup, it's not the best thing for your social life. And as I get older, in my 20s and early 30s, you still look for new friends. And at some point of your late 30s, you're like, actually, I don't really want new more friends. I just want to be closer to the friends that I have and really spend time with my best friends. And that really has been a shift in the last few years.
Interesting. Interesting. So do you think it's been maybe the impact of COVID, where we kind of were kind of cut off from the closer people in the beginning?
Maybe. Like pre-COVID, obviously, we were always traveling and we were always around huge amounts of people at our company, and suddenly that's all remote. And I find I am struggling. Like, I went to the office today for a few couple hours, and I was like, I felt, there's this constant, I want to engage with them, but I'm used to being so productive at home, and I've become unproductive when I'm in the office. So I left midway through thinking I'm just wasting time, like chatting with everyone, which is great, but I've got so much work to do at this point. So I left the office and went back home to become the productive man again.
Yeah, the productive Matt. I like it. Well, so you said you started out in restaurants going up to your way. When did you get involved in Muse? What were you doing before? Is there, you know, there's probably a bigger gap. You've been with Muse for 10 years, you said, right?
Yeah. So I did hotel school, studied hotel management in Holland. And then at 21, I was like, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to travel and see the world. So I moved to London for a year with Hilton. Hilton put me on this fast track management program. So I did London for a year, South Africa. And then I ended up in Prague where they offered me a job. And I ran the food and beverage at the big Hilton. Like we had a 1,000-room hotel here. Wow. So lots of restaurants. And then I moved to front office, which was my dream. I love front office. When you have that volume of rooms and you've got multiple reception, we had a group reception, a main reception, an executive reception, an average day with like 400 or 500 check-ins. It is exciting. And, you know, I love that stress of having to deal with it on the moment. But then at the end of the day, you're done, right? You've checked them all in and out and you're done. And the next day repeats. And I love that there's this instant gratification, which, you know, now in my role, it's much harder to get that gratification on a day-to-day basis because everything is a long project that comes to fruition. And you still have those moments when you sign a big deal.
Yeah.
And then I left front office and went into sales. Like someone saw me and they're like, you should be in sales. And I was like, sure, I'll try that. And actually loved sales. Like this, you know, being able to sell a hotel and be like, we had a massive convention space. I used to travel the US and get these conference organizers to bring their events into Prague. And I had to sell the destination Prague and the convention space. And I was really good at it. Like I really loved puzzling in these events and making it work and convincing these people. And then I met Richard. Like my last role was regional director of sales for Eastern Europe. And I was just traveling nonstop and I just didn't love it anymore. You know, once you're in sales for a while, it just repeats itself, that cycle year on year. And I have ideas, like I have a big mouth and I have ideas, but you don't get to have ideas about anything that isn't sales once you're in a big corporate company.
Yeah.
And I just felt stuck. And that's the time when I met Richard. And, you know, with Richard and I, it was love at first sight. We just connected and we went for these beer nights talking about what we thought the future of hospitality was.
Yeah.
And we really connected instantly about some of these ideas. And his ideas, you know, he's generally a long-term thinker. He's got big ideas. And I'm like, right, so what do we do first? What are we going to do today as a first step towards that big idea? And I think that middle ground that we found, you know, being on the opposite sides of the spectrum is a fantastic ground that we found. And so I joined in early 2013, and we started building the PMS. That was when I joined, we really pivoted towards saying, okay, there's a problem here. All these hotels want to connect with these cool startup companies, but the PMS is so, it's such legacy, this property management system, it's all legacy without open APIs. So all these startups cannot connect to the data that sits there. So you can't drive innovation in the experiences that employees and guests have at their hotels. We just didn't know what a journey that was going to be. Like building a PMS, it was a nightmare. Like it's way harder than we'd imagine. Then we're like, sure, I've checked a few people in my life. I know how this system works. But then once you get to the accounting piece of it, that's when it gets really hard.
Well, I can only imagine too for integrations. And like, again, I started at a 716 room hotel, not as 1,000 rooms as you, but like the high of checking people in, it's very like you get so routine, but then you get really creative with how you interact with people based on body language. And it gets really fun and exciting. And like you said, that instant gratification is there, but like with the amount of integration partners there are, like, you know, I was talking with another friend, this last week, and it's just like the tech space in vacation rentals and hotels, restaurants, even now is becoming so big. And eventually there's going to have to be a couple big players that have to integrate with all these either little ones, or these little ones are going to have to consolidate in some kind of format to make it easier for the overall operator. For you guys, when you're taking this, you know, building a PMS, and Richard, I remember it's one of my favorite episodes, to be honest, of the podcast outside of this one, obviously. You got to do a, you know, give you a little applause there, but he's so future focused, so philosophical on, you know, what does that experience look like? How do you capture the guests for 168 hours out of the month rather than the 20 to 48 hours that they're there on the property? And I think about that conversation all the time. So when you guys are being to build this one for the audience, just for anyone maybe that hasn't listened to Richard's episode or they're a new listener, what makes Muse so different from any other software PMS in the industry, And then also give us, you know, building this product and this journey of creating something so different and so unique, balancing the current daily operation load that most operators are used to then building towards a future that's a lot different.
That's a big question. So when you think about the space that we're in, which is property management system, PMS, it's a terrible acronym, but it's effectively the system that runs the hotel. It's the core system where all the reservations sit, that you check in and out, where housekeeping gets their reports from, the management gets their report from, the accountant gets their report from. So it's a huge database of guest profile and reservation data. And 80% of our industry still sits on like on-premise solution, like in a server in a back room, there's some system running, or it's hosted in the cloud, and they call that a cloud system, but it isn't. And when we came into this, we said, well, you know, let's first build the PMS piece. And we built that in as a cloud first. And none of our developers, we didn't have products. It was just developers, me and Richard. We didn't come out of the hotels. I came out of hotels and Richard came. So we would inject our ideas into it. But we didn't say, well, let's build, you know, the night audit, because that's such a great feature that exists in PMSs, is, you know, a manual procedure that a human has to do every night to move the day to the next day.
Yeah.
We just said, these are the problems that you need to solve with this system. We just listed the problems. And then the developers started working on this. And it became a very different system to what's out there today. And because you're cloud first, you know, you've got to, you know, loading screens is much harder than when it sits in a local server. So you need to bypass steps. Like you want to bring in automation. You want to make sure that a user can get very fast into a different screen. And if you have an on-prem, you can very quickly load screen on top of each other, but you don't want to do that in the cloud. So we really thought about the user experience, and from any screen, you could get to another part of the system with just one click. But we also thought, if we're cloud first, the employees can connect to this hotel from anywhere, but also the guests can connect to it. And we said, we need to build a guest-facing site to the same system, which is where the guests check in online, where the guests check out online, where they message to reception. And that really was a huge step forward, because suddenly anyone who buys our PMS doesn't have to buy some huge piece of software that deals with the guest. It's just a native part of our system, because if a guest checks in online, they've already filled in that profile. Because what happens, you walk into a hotel today still, like, welcome to Hotel XYZ. Can I have your passport and your credit card? That is still the same question. I get so tired of it, because it's so unnecessary today.
Yeah.
And it's because of data entry. Then a person starts opening your passport and starts typing all that data into the system. Well, why don't you have the guests do that themselves 2 days before arrival, so that they can just walk in, pick up their key, or even get a remote key if the hotel invests into their door locks. And that's really where it makes a difference, when you have these tools that drive a lot of automation. We build in payment solutions very early on, so that, you know, what Uber has done to the taxi industry, you just walk out of the taxi and everything is taken care of. You get a receipt in your inbox. You've already got your credit card online. You can still tip the person. That's what we did in the hotel. We deeply embedded payments into the whole journey, so that at no point do you have to ask a guest for their credit card, because that is the anti-hospitality approach, right? Like, oh, it's so great to have you here. Can I just check that you have money in your account? It just doesn't feel like a warm welcome.
Seriously, and it's like, it becomes very transactional right at the gate, where more or less I would love to be like, hey, welcome. How was your trip? Do you want a cocktail? Do you want to get something to eat? Do you just want to go take a nap? If we can set a wake-up call for you, you know, stuff like that. That's way easier. But I also love that when, like, Richard was talking on the episode, is that Muse is really a CRM in the sense of if I have multiple properties around the world instead of, or even in just a city. And if you come stay with us, Matt, one time, your profile travels with you at any other property, knowing that you love to be on the 12th floor if possible, or the highest floor, north facing, so you can see the water, like all these notes and travel details kind of follow you, which I remember specifically, if my repeat guest checked in with a different agent that wasn't obviously me, they would have to reinstate their, you know, I want, you know, Mr. I'll use an example. Mr. Chardin loved to use his Amex card, but he would book with a Visa. So I would always have him switch it at check-in. Granted, like, this wasn't a great system compared to Muse, but, you know, we would switch it at check-in. And then, of course, he loved to be on the top floor. He loved his bonus points rather than the gift credit for the bar or the lounge with Marriott rewards points. Like, I knew all these things, And when I saw Mr. Charding, I knew immediately how to do it. And we'd have his keys ready. He'd be on the 16th floor. Da, da, da. But anybody else, none of that. He'd have to reinstate it, and he'd get frustrated because maybe it's a new person, and they like to be strict, and they like to be like, oh, well, you're a gold member, so I'm not going to put you on the 16th floor. And there's all like these things, right? And the fact that anybody can have access to that type of data, the personalized side where it's not just automated, where it's really to the intention of your profile, is super, super, like, just that's what excited me a lot out of the conversation. But
and it's that age-old question, like, have you stayed with us before? I'm like, yes, they have, because you know, you can go into the profile history, but you shouldn't have to go into the profile history to figure this out. So we put little icons on reservation. So if it's a round error, I know that that's a returning guest. So I can just say, welcome back to the hotel. But if, you know, if that's the previous complainer, you also see an icon. So you instantly see, hey, I should actually read the comments in the profile. Sure. So we hard coded a lot of these icons throughout so that it triggers behaviors in the employees that drive a better hospitality experience. And once you connect all of those profiles through, the data just gets richer and richer over time, and you just deliver better experiences.
I love that. So when you guys are creating this, now this comes the big question, right? Like, how do you balance the current day-to-day ops and what the industry is used to? You know, everyone's used to Opera, everyone's used to, you know, Marsha and all this other like different, you know, plug-in back-end softwares that have a big server room in the back and all this other stuff. How did you guys balance introducing this into an industry that was so legacy to now getting them to get future focused in the sense of what this is going to look like in 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Like, it's been a really deliberate process, and it takes a long time, right? Yeah. You buy a PMS and then you sit on it for 20 years because our industry has been stuck with some of these systems for like 20 years, and we only exist for 10 years. So, and in the beginning, it was really hard because hotels are like, well, how do I know that you're not going to go bankrupt in a year and then we're stuck without a PMS? And that topic of conversation no longer happens because obviously we're well-funded at this point. But in the beginning, that was painful. And it's a lot about brand building, but also making true on your commitments to R&D to make sure that you really actually invest. And we've committed to invest 40% of all of our revenue back into R&D constantly so that we stay at the forefront of the innovation. Yeah. Because we have ambitions to become number one, and we will become number one. Like, there is no question in my mind. We will become the largest cloud player in the space. But it requires hard work because our system isn't at that level. It's great at catering to you know, decent sized hotel chains, like up to 200 hotels. It is a great system. But the moment you go scale up to these really large chains, we need some additional products and features that we're building in. And we're doing that right now. We've got product teams working on a lot of those features because we're going up market. But I don't think we'll ever be happy because Richard and I, you know, we're ambitious, and, you know, we will never think that we're done with anything. I remember the first year we're like, right. So we didn't know anything about development, right? So we were like, so the first year we'll build the PMS, and then the second year we'll build the POS. But what are we going to do with our developers after that? Because we just had no idea. And like, you know, now it's just growing and growing. And we've got, I think, 100 developers and 40 people in product. So those numbers are growing, and we only ever will need more developers just to build the same product. We're still on the PMS side of the industry at this point. So we've got our work cut out for us.
Definitely. And who knows, you guys are going to run into some problems in the future to get it to this point. And then you're going to have to change a lot of different things that's going to impact the whole industry again. And then you guys are just at square.
Yeah.
Keep that cycle going. But I do have a question in the sense of, you know, so I saw not too long ago the announcement with Accor. So Accor and Muse, you know, pretty big deal. And Accor is a very, you know, prestigious brand where it's not just a Best Western or, you know, whatever. But so tell us, how's that partnership come into fruition, and what was that deal looking like, and what do you guys expect to do with the future with the brand's partners as, you know, moving into that space with them?
It took us a while to get in because it's obviously a large organization. I think that the fifth largest hotel chain in the world. Yeah. So they're a large organization with a lot of hierarchy that you have to infiltrate. And we go in from multiple angles. So we have to go in on the ownership side because the owners have a lot of power. So we have to convince them that it's right. You want to have conversations with the brand, with the technology people. So it took us a long time to get in. But once that ball starts rolling, and I think Accor really, it's smart what they're doing. Right. They basically, and a lot of hotel chains have their own legacy software that they built themselves. And the pandemic has been an accelerator for them to realize, right, when my hotels are empty, it's not great to maintain this huge technology team that is maintaining legacy software. These are old solutions that they're maintaining and keeping alive. And of course, really put their hand in the fire as the first hotel company saying, we are going into the cloud, and we're going to work with off-the-shelf solutions like Muse. And I think it's just really brave because some of the other brands are still stuck with their legacy software. And at some point, they're going to have to move because that software is just not going to survive. So either you rebuild everything from the ground up, which is a huge investment, or you go with an off-the-shelf solution that is completely integrated in the entire infrastructure of apps out there. And I think inevitably some of these brands will have to move forward. And Accor was definitely at the forefront of that decision. I think really brave, and I'm excited to see the rollout happening. We've got, I think, about 70 or 80 hotels live with them, and it's moving fast now.
Wow. Well, I was going to say, and you know, you're kind of talking like they keep it's a big investment for them to, you know, keep building on these legacy softwares. But at the end of the day, they're just putting band-aids on something that's already pretty much dead. In a sense of, it's no longer what we need. It's no longer
That's it. Like, if you think about an independent hotels that can very quickly change their PMS and suddenly benefit from online check-in, online check-out, automated payments. So an independent hotels can move so fast to change the way that customers experience them. But as a large hotel brand, it's going to be really hard and a slow move. It's going to take multiple years to get there. So the only way to do that is by taking an off-the-shelf solution that is built in the cloud, that is already integrated with everything. Because if you have to start from scratch, it's just going to take too long and you're going to lose out to independent brands.
Definitely. And, you know, one thing, and I know you guys work outside of just hotels, right? You have, you know, vacation rentals, hostels,
yeah,
stuff. And I think, you know, I have another really big question for you, but, you know, outside of the hotel, you're not just like Richard described, you're not selling a room, you're selling space, right? So how can you manage the overall revenue of the space rather than just a bed, a shower, and possibly a desk to work, right? That's pretty much what you're getting. So where do you guys see that shifting? Do you see operators really thinking about how they're selling room nights rather than, you know, maybe changing a couple of rooms to a podcast studio and letting locals come record a podcast or do YouTubes or co-working and like selling the space differently rather than just nightly revenue comparative to, you know, other type of industries that can use a space or use whatever product and service throughout any hours of the day?
Yeah, we've got a few customers that are super creative on this side. So I think one of the customers we love working with is Student Hotels. And they've really figured out how do you combine the local community with hotel guests and make that really buzzing. So you've got students for a semester, they move out over the summer, and then you fill those rooms with other types of customers. And that flexibility in the pandemic has been amazing because they could very quickly shift to different segments. And you see customers who are really experimenting with co-working space and loading tables in a lobby into a co-working solution inside Muse. Yeah. And you think about every square meter in your hotel that you need to optimize from a real estate point of view. And traditionally, you make money off the rooms. And that's great. But actually, right now, it's pretty empty and you need to start getting creative. And we're just daring hotels to get way more creative. We loaded all these space types in our system and we're like, you know, just try it out. Just put it online, stick it on your website, start selling it online. And some hotels have really benefited from it. And yes, you need to get creative with it because not everyone is set up for it. So maybe you need to convert part of your lobby into a co-working space and maybe deploy kiosks there. Generally a lobby is a space where you have this giant reception desk where people queue up for a bad experience. Maybe rethink that whole experience so that it's your prime real estate. The lobby is the nicest piece of the hotel that is used for queuing up at a reception desk. Rethink that. You can totally do it in a different way.
So you're seeing a lot of partners shift away from the front desk. And I've always kind of called it, like the last few years, I've kind of called it the Verizon wireless model, right? Where you walk in and there's not like a desk or counter you go to. They just kind of come up with an iPad and do this.
Yeah.
I see a lot of partners going towards that direction, or even just like the kiosk where there's someone there to help if needed. But today it's at the leisure of the guests to really check themselves in, put all their information, do their
own stuff. That's it. Like, we've got this client, the Zetwell in London, and it's just, it's like you're walking into an Apple store. They have this beautiful designed lobby and then a really nice designed row of kiosks that you come up to, and you can pretty much check yourself in. But if you get stuck here, there's a really friendly person to go and help you. And they're always on standby walking around. But that way you need less staff, which is critical because staff is a real problem in our industry today.
Yeah.
But also guests like it, like they're used to doing that now, and they're not enjoying you asking them for their passport and their credit card and seeing you punch that data into a system. There is no enjoyment in that check-in process. So think about how can you change that?
Yeah, no, for sure. And airports are doing it. They're getting more, you know, I'm a big Alaska Airlines member. So, you know, I'll immediately, obviously I do it on my phone because millennials,
yeah.
Right? But at the end of the day, when you walk in the airport, you still see all those kiosks there. People like the printed out ticket. There's that option. And really the major issue or queue that you've been calling it is really for checking bags and doing the stuff you kind of have to do. You can't really.
And it's for those guests who actually want the attention. So if you can cut, you know, half of your queue and then not get stressed out because there's five people waiting who actually don't need your help and focus on those guests who really want to have that conversation. And I think that's really the difference. Like, a lot segment your customers and business travelers, they just want to get to the room and know what the Wi-Fi code is. They don't want that experience. It's just about speed because they're just in the destination for a short period of time. And efficiency is more important than service. And segment your customers. And that's what's going to drive much better service and happier customers.
Have you guys seen the business customers? Like, I know I'm a big, so I'm a gold member with Marriott Bonvoy. I'm a gold with Alaska. Like, I kind of like, you know, I like to get those rewards points, and I kind of like, you know, the recognition, right? Like, it's like, hey, you're loyal. I'm a very big loyalist, like,
yeah,
personal life with friends and family and people in the business world, like, very much like, if you're real with me, I'm 100% like loyal. That's it. I'll be you know, a lost puppy that, you know, will follow you the day we die. But, you know, have you, like, with surveys or anything like that in the data in the industry, Are business members that, you know, outside of the couple that wants to get the Wi-Fi code, they just want to get to the room, they want to go work, have a cocktail, do whatever. Is there a small percentage that likes to get that, you know, that little recognition? Oh, welcome back, Matt. We're so happy to see you. You know, here's a voucher, go get a cocktail. I know that you love talking to Ben over there. He's a great guy, blah, 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 blah. Like, do you see that happening? Or is that really just like their focus is get to the room, get the Wi-Fi and do my thing? I've said this on Slick Talk many times before, and as time goes on, it becomes more and more true. Operators have been so used to multiple logins, different dashboards, and overall segregated data points for their hospitality brand. I'm proud to say this is no longer going to be the case for the industry. As a podcast partner, Journey MOS is made for operators by operators. One dashboard, one solution to keep your business in shape and ahead of the competition. If you think this is too good to be true, then you need to go to journey.com, that is JURNY.com, to learn how Journey MOS can get you ahead of the big players in your market. And now, back to the episode.
Like, I'm sure it exists, right? So, and you can build that into this, like, you can totally build in workflows where those customers can still check themselves in online, but, you know, you could work with Zapier to trigger a workflow saying, if this VIP checks in, SMS the lobby host, who instantly knows that the guy is just checking in at the desk. So they know to go and say, hey, welcome back. And it's, that would be such a smooth experience if that instantly happens.
Yeah.
And you can do so much with Zapier, completely integrated with Muse, and every trigger in the system, like every button you click could become a trigger to do an action. It's this, you know, you come into your room and there's a bottle of melted ice with wine in because they put it there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And warm cheese that's wrapped.
Yeah. Oh, I hate the cheese or the fruit that's being pre-cut and it just dried up.
Yeah.
But that could be the moment you press check-in, it SMSs the room service department to go and bring you that. So the moment you walk into your room within 5 minutes,
fresh,
someone knocks on your door with a really nice surprise. And actually, it will be more personal because you actually can say, hey, welcome back to the hotel, versus it just being there with a greeting card that's been pre-printed.
What a slick experience.
Yeah.
No pun intended. but no, that's so cool. I love just like the creativity on the other side, because the one thing I think, you know, as we're prepping for 2022, working with partners on our end and going into these big operators and these tech companies, the number one thing I think we're seeing is like everyone's so focused on automation, which is great. Like automation does need to get rid of a lot of the BS behind the scenes where, you know, like the front desk agent typing in all the information. That is just something that, yeah. Or switching night audit. Like that is just the worst waste of time.
I literally interviewed a girl at Hilton and we tried to recruit her and she actually, I think she's joining us and she's a night auditor. And I was like, okay, tell me about what you do at night. And she went through the process and she's like, you know, every second night we have to call the Indian support because it gets stuck every night. I'm like, yeah, it gets stuck because it's a stupid process that shouldn't have been there in the first place. 100%. But there are physically people in our industry that at night go and like swirl the system to ramp it into the next day and to post all these charges. And it's
crazy.
It just doesn't make sense to me anymore.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense. But I love that you guys are getting into that balance of not just automate, but really keep that personal experience, because that's where a lot of people go wrong, is that they fully automate the messaging, they fully automate the turnover of the housekeeper, they fully automate do these things, and then they remove the human and the human interaction, the experience completely. And that is where a lot of issues come up. You see these great brands that really start declining in service scores, where it's like they used to be the number one on TripAdvisor, or they used to be, you know, on Airbnb, they used to be at a 4.9 star rating, but now they're like slowly slipping away from that because of too much automation. And I love that you guys are really keeping that balance into what you guys are building at Muse.
At the core, we're hoteliers. We just love our industry and we travel so much that we just want to, I'd love to be surprised by a hotel sometimes, you know, when something unexpected happens, and it's rare to be honest that it happens, but when it happens, it's a memorable experience that I'll talk about.
I was going to say, has building Muse and being so deep in the development of a product like it is, do you just get so like, are you just critiquing every hotel when you walk in? Is it just kind of ruined that part for you at all?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. There's so many.
It does. Like, you know what a hotel can do, and you just, you know, most of the time see bad experiences. And you do critique everything, and I don't like it. Like, you know, when I go out with my partner and I point out all the things that are wrong, I actually would love to point out all the things that I love about something, but most of the time you focus on the negative, and as do I as well.
It's horrible. I was just talking to a bunch of friends in Miami, and we're just like, it just ruins the experience. Cause like, you're like, oh, I'm going to go to Mexico for a month, or I'm going to go to Bahamas, or they're going to do this thing. But then it's like, they get there and they're like, all right, the landscaping's dirty, needs fixing, that needs paint. the communication, you give me my door code, the door instruction or the check-in instructions are confusing, like all this stuff. And it's like, I wish, like you said, I wish I could highlight the better points more often rather than negative, but oh well.
At least you get to travel.
Yes, exactly. At least we're not, you know, stuck behind a screen 24/7. So back to another big question. We've kind of touched it a little bit. You mentioned you're committed to investing about 40% of your revenue back into building what Muse is and can do for more and more in the future. So outside of that investment, that commitment, how do you guys prevent yourself from becoming a legacy software? How do you make sure that you don't become, and excuse me for anyone that may be listening at Opera or whatever, but how do you not become Opera? How do you not become these softwares that are really just becoming replaceable?
And it's a hard thing, because there's a difference between sales-led growth and product-led growth. And most PMS companies, they are sales-led growth, meaning I'm about to sign a major deal. So, and they will want 5 features. So we're going to just build 5 features that they ask us without questioning whether those are the right features to build for the future. And we really push hard to become product-led growth. And there are elements of, you know, sales-led growth in there where sometimes, yes, we do talk it to a chain and they're insisting that we put something on the roadmap, and we'll question it so that we build it in a different way so that it makes more sense. But it's really product-led growth is at the core of what we're trying to build, and giving the product team the freedom to discover better solutions rather than, you know, us, our sales team dictating what the roadmap looks like. And it is very hard. Let me tell you, when you talk to major companies like an Accor, you know, to say no to some of their requests, it takes a lot of courage to get on those calls and to say, sorry, we're not going to do it because we don't think it makes sense. But we do say no more than we say yes. And I think that's the most important thing to stay on the innovative side of it. But yeah, at some point we will become legacy. If, you know, it's just, we, the bigger we get, bureaucracy comes in much faster. And we try very hard to make sure that it doesn't slow us down, but it will at some point. But as long as we're aware of it and we can fight it, I think we can hold it at bay.
Well, and it kind of gives the like mindset I've talked about a few other times. Like, you know, Elon Musk talks about his patent for Tesla, right? Like, everything is public. It's free information. Anyone can copy. I think like having that mindset that you just said there is that it does kind of like, if you get to that point where, you know, like if it, let's say 30, 40 years down the road, right? Muse is no longer the top, you know, brand. And then it gives everyone the new generation for whatever that change and shift is going to be in the industry. It gives them that ability to really look at something as an example and say, we're going to be Muse, but we're going to be the, like, you know, we're going to be our generation's Muse. We're going to be our future's Muse for the industry. And I think that's like, at the end of the day, legacy is a good word when you're leaving a positive legacy as that, which is people looking towards you as a like kind of North Star for what is possible, right? So I think at the end of the day, yeah, if you become legacy, it's going to be a good one. So at least it's not going to be that company is shit. So, you know, get rid of them and never, like, that's an example of what not to do. You get the opposite. So that's really encouraging. Okay, I'll try to wrap it up with one more quick question. It's kind of a more rapid fire, but 2022 is a very exciting year for, I think, the whole industry. I think we kind of come out of that gray fog and gloom that we were in 2020 and 2021. But what do you think of, you know, for the roadmap for you guys as a CEO, as a company, or even just the industry as a whole, this next year and even 2023? I can't believe I'm saying the word 2023, but, you know, just going into that, where do you guys see things going? Do you see any specific thing? Like, we're always talking about remote work and all this other like trends and topics, but do you see anything new that people aren't talking about?
I think people are gonna very quickly snap back to what they used to. Unfortunately, I wish that, you know, suddenly hotels would become super innovative and have co-working spaces everywhere, but I think the core of our industry will still be bedrooms. And we're just waiting for all of the travel to bounce back. You know, leisure, it'll bounce back by April. Like, Easter is going to be that start sign for the leisure travel season. I think a lot of companies will want to meet their team. So you see a lot of conventions getting booked very last minute. But the corporate is not going to come back immediately. And in 2023, I think we'll see some rebound of it. Some hotels will, you know, some companies will allow for remote work, but others are trying to get their teams back in. So I think a lot of companies that were more traditional to begin with were probably bound back and it will normalize. But there is a lot of innovation around what you, like, the one thing that excites me is we've become a remote first organization. Yeah. And I think a lot of other companies do as well. And that's great for travel, because that means, you know, our CFO is working from an island in Spain for the next 7 weeks because she can. Yeah. She just needs a computer. And she can just be online there. It doesn't matter. And at least she gets sunshine. I'm sitting in the rain here in Prague. And that is something that really excites me, that companies become innovative about where employees can be. And hotels will then need to adapt to that, because I don't want to be stuck in a 17 square meter room in London. No, I want a proper workspace and a separate working room. And some of these hotels have really started thinking about that. But it's going to be a slow burn. I think it's going to take a while for the industries to adapt to it. But that's the one that I get excited about, because I love it when I dial into one of our team members and I'm like, where are you?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that they're there. I love that they're traveling and that they're exploring the world. I think it's an exciting thing.
Me too. I agree. I'll be in Cancun for the whole month of March. I want to get out of the rain and the snow. So granted, it's nice, but, you know, if we can go somewhere else, why not? That's very exciting. And I think, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the traditional companies, because, you know, I was always asked a question throughout COVID, is just, do you see people going backwards when things open up, when the whole world internationally and domestically travels like normal numbers, 2019, 18 numbers, you know, how many hoteliers or how many, you know, operators are really going to go, okay, no need to invest in smart locks, no need to invest in these, no need to, like, we're good. We attempted to get people there during COVID and to fill up some occupancy, and we said the right things and we showed the right cleaning procedures and blah, blah, blah. But now it's back to square one. Go to the front desk. Have an old legacy software that keeps crashing.
Yeah.
Overbooking, all this other stuff. Like, you know, how many people are going to go to that? And it's unfortunately probably a bigger number than I expect. But at the end of the day, hopefully you'll have some of those that just keep building off the excitement of travel being back at the number where they have to meet these new demands. Be a good time.
Nice.
Yes, hopefully. Awesome. Well, I love to ask the final question for our guests on the show. Where's one link, one place? Obviously, we'll put more. We'll put the Muse website and LinkedIn and Facebook and everything there. Your guys' Instagram is super fun to follow, by the way. It's super great to see all the staff and just the team members and everything really just get crazy and have fun with the stories. And it's just really cool. But where's like one place that you can send anyone listening to right now?
Like just a link that they should go and visit?
Yeah, in the show notes. Like if they're just scrolling through show notes and they say, this is the number one link that Matt suggested to go to, where would it go?
Like I am obsessed with LinkedIn, and I think LinkedIn is such a positive platform. Like throughout the pandemic, a lot of those other social platforms have become this center of negativity, but LinkedIn throughout it all has been just a space for positivity. And Richard and I are incredibly active on LinkedIn because it's a way to engage with our customers. And sure. If I'd say anything, you know, add me on LinkedIn. And we post constantly about our culture at the company, but also about the innovation that we're doing. And it's the platform that's where I found investors into the company and where we found employees. And it's such a good platform. And I don't work for Microsoft to promote it, but you know, it's one of the platforms that I've been on since the start. And I think it's wonderful if you subscribe to the right people.
100%. I'll second that message, and I'll make sure everything is in the show notes. So if you're listening right now, go ahead, check it out. I'll put Matt's LinkedIn. I'll put the Muse LinkedIn. We'll get everyone all connected. It'd be great. And I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show, Matt. It's been incredible to really pick your brain and kind of geek out in a more exciting way than most. So it's really cool to see what you guys are doing and building at Muse.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Awesome. And if everyone that's listening, if you haven't already, please like and subscribe to everything at Muse, and we'll see you guys all again next week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our show partners for making Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, possible. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we would love to connect with you outside of the podcast. So you can follow us on all of our social media channels for daily hospitality content, or find us on slicktalkthepodcast.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and we will see you guys all again next week. Smart locks, smart thermostats, automation, and a solution for any hotel and vacation rental company. Our show partners at Operto are the leading solution for operators to enhance their operations by integrating with your property management software and making sure that all your smart devices create a contactless guest experience while streamlining your operations. So don't forget to check them out on their website, send me a message, or just let them know that Will sent you and you are in good hands. So get ready to enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, and check out operto.com or go to the podcast website and see our partners page. What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast.